Kia ora koutou, it's 11 on Sunday. You're listening to Art Bank.
Good morning. We're back here with Art Bank. We've had a little bit of a hiatus over the Christmas period, as is in general the art world. We're kind of in a transitional period at the moment, I think, where a lot of galleries are having summer shows that'll open, and then opening new exhibitions around late February or March. But we've got a good show lined up. In the first half today, we're going to be memorialising John Berger, the seminal novelist, art critic and painter who described himself primarily as a storyteller. And then in the latter half of the show, we're going to be talking to Liming Hu about her upcoming residency over summer at Enjoy Gallery down in Wellington with Daphne Simons as part of Riff Raff. If you're not familiar with Riff Raff, it's a artist-run space that was part of a project Liming and Daphne ran at Glovebox this last year for, I believe, 3 weeks. And this Enjoy show is a continuation of that project. Also today we're going to be listening to a bit of David Bowie, because it is what would be his 70th birthday if he was still alive. But first, let's dive into John Berger. This first excerpt from his work is John Berger reading 12 Theses on the Economy of the Dead. So here we go.
Clearer. The credibility of religion depends upon the clarity of certain unusual exchanges. The mystifications of religion are the result of trying to systematically produce such exchanges. 3. The rarity of clear exchange is due to the rarity of what can cross intact the frontier between timelessness and time. 4. To see the dead as the individuals they once were tends to obscure their nature. Try to consider the living as we might assume the dead to do, collectively. The collective would accrue not only across space, but also throughout time. It would include all those who had ever lived. And so, we would also be thinking of the dead. The living reduce the dead to those who have lived. Yet the dead already include the living in their own great collective. 5. The dead inhabit a timeless moment of construction continually re-begun. The construction is the state of the universe at any instant. 6. According to their memory of life, the dead know the moment of construction as also a moment of collapse. Having lived, the dead can never be inert. 7. If the dead live in a timeless moment, how can they have a memory? They remember no more than being thrown into time, as does everything which existed or exists. 8. The difference between the dead and the unborn is that the dead have this memory. As the number of dead increase, the memory enlarges. 9. The memory of the dead existing in timelessness may be thought of as a form of imagination concerning the possible. This imagination is close to, resides in, God, but I do not know how. 10. In the world of the living, there is an equivalent but contrary phenomenon. The living sometimes experience timelessness, as revealed in sleep, ecstasy, instance of extreme danger, orgasm, perhaps in the experience of dying itself. During these instants, the living imagination covers the entire field of experience and overruns the contours of the individual life or death. It touches the waiting imagination of the dead. 11. What is the relation of the dead to what has not yet happened, to the future? All the future is the construction in which their imagination is engaged. 12. How do the living live with the dead? Until the dehumanization of society by capitalism, all the living awaited the experience of the dead. It was their ultimate future. By themselves, the living were incomplete. Thus, living and dead were interdependent, always. Only a uniquely modern form of egotism has broken this interdependence, with disastrous results for the living, who now think of the dead as the eliminated.
You're listening to Art Bank.
That was John Berger's 12 Theses on the Economy of the Dead. And yes, if you're not familiar with John Berger, he's a British storyteller who spent the majority of the latter half of his life in France after abandoning Britain for political reasons. He produced the incredibly popular 1960s British art show Ways of Seeing. And he died a week ago at age 90. So we've got another reading from him coming up, but first it's David Bowie's John, I'm Only Dancing. And a little known fact about this is the sax version, which features Lou Reed on rhythm guitar.
Saw you watching from the stairs, yeah, everyone that ever cared. I'm on the dance.
It's 2 o'clock. Back on the good foot's about to start.
No, wait. What are you doing? I'm not wearing any shoes.
Huh?
Oh, no. It's too late. The salacious mix of quality grooves. It's too much. I can't not dance. It's only a matter of time before my poor, unprotected feet are ground down to wet, chalky nubs and I'm left totally footless.
I mean, I can just turn off the radio.
No. I like this song.
Back on the good foot, dousing you in solid soul toe tappers, rock steady groovers, and filthy funk freakouts every Sunday from 2 to 4 with your delightful hosts, Tina Turntables and Mr. Crawley. Back on the good foot, proudly presented by Auckland's Shoemaster Generals, Pat Menzies. They've got your dancing shoes sorted and anything else your good feet could wish for. Walk on down to Canterbury Arcade at 174 Queen Street or online at patmenziesshoes.co.nz. Oh man, I just realised good foot and it's a shoe shop. That's classic. Good job, sales team.
You're back with Art Bank. And before the break, that was John, I'm Only Dancing Sax version by David Bowie, who, as I said earlier, would have been 70 today if he was still alive. John, I'm Only Dancing was an early single during the glam era that was resuscitated in the mid-70s by Bowie and turned into a disco song as John, I'm Only Dancing Again for both the Gooster and its eventual released version, Young Americans, recorded in Philadelphia. Now we're going to go to another reading from John Berger. This is him reading his story, I'm not sure which one this is. I had it queued up before, but I know it's good. Here's John Berger.
I no longer know what century this story, which I'm going to read you, happened in. It happened here in this field. All I do know is that in some way it happened now. It's called An Independent Woman. Catherine seized each man to embrace him. Her long arms pulled him towards her tall body. First Nicolas, her brother, then Jean-Francois, the neighbor. And she kissed them on both cheeks, near the mouth. At 74, she was just the eldest of the three. It's buried 1 meter deep, said Catherine. I can hear Mathieu telling me that, 1 meter deep. Where does it cross the field? Shouted Nicolas. She shrugged her shoulders. 50 years is a long time. But I remember him saying it was 1 meter deep. 2 months ago, when she was helping her brother bring in his second hay, she had told him that the water to the bassin beside her house was no longer flowing. After that, she had refused to mention the subject again. She was going to be dependent on nobody. Yet now, the expression in her eyes was excited, as though she had willed the two men to come up.
The spring must be at the top, said Jean-François,
and he began to climb the field, disappearing into the fog.
Jean-François, she cried out, come back before I lose sight of you.
Born into another house, Catherine would surely have married. But each year of her life, more men had left the valley, and she herself had inherited too little, to propose to any of them that they remain. She seized hold of Jean-François by the arm.
You shouldn't have come up. You shouldn't give up the whole day here for me.
We dig 1 meter deep at right angles to the line. Begin at the top, come down to the bottom. That way, we're bound to arrive at the pipe.
And the pipe will lead us to the spring. Jesus, Maria, Joseph, we'll have it by midday.
They began digging. Underneath the snow, the ground was still unfrozen. when Catherine came from the house carrying in a canvas bag glasses, a jug of hot wine and some bread and cheese. She heard the men before she could see them. At a distance of 20 meters, the white fog merged into the white snow on the ground. Each time Jean-Francois bent his back to strike the pick into the earth, he grunted. And she heard Nicolas scraping his spade so the earth should not stick to it and make it heavier. She had worked once as a waitress in a cafe near the Gare de Lyon in Paris. She and her brother Mathieu, the one who had laid the pipe, and the one who was killed by the Germans during the occupation here. They were the first members of the family, her and her brother, ever to earn wages. And to do this, they both went to Paris. He was a porter, she was a waitress. Her lasting impression of the capital was one of money continually changing hands. There, without money, you could literally do nothing. Not even drink water. With money, you could do anything. He who could buy courage was brave, even if he was a coward. The two men had dug the trench exactly 1 meter deep. From time to time, they had measured it. It was straight, impeccably cut, cleaned out. One side stacked the turf, on the other the earth. And all the stones lifted out were put together to make a pile. Nicolas scrambled out of the trench and Jean-Francois plunged his spade into the loose soil as if in the hope that it would disappear into the very center of the earth. Living by himself in the corner under the mountain. Just over there. He had the habit of making violent movements. In his solitude down there, such violence was a kind of company. Catherine poured out the hot wine. The men kept the glasses up to their faces between sips, their noses in the steam, which smelt of cloves and cinnamon. In God's name, it must be here, Nicholas grumbled. I tell you, if it's not in this field, there's no fire in hell. During the second half of the day, Nicolas continued the long trench already begun. Jean-Francois dug another, higher up, and Catherine started digging a third near the pair of apple trees. When she had cut the turf, she kicked the snow off before lifting the pieces up. She disliked having cold hands or cold feet. At night, she took 3 hot bricks to bed with her, one for each foot and one for the small of her back. As she swung the pick, the breath came out of her with a whistle, quite unlike Jean-Francois' grunt. After working in a restaurant by the Gare de Lyon, she became a maid in a doctor's house. The doctor worked at the hospital of Saint-Antoine and lived a few streets away in the Rue Charles V. Her principal job were cleaning the grates and washing floors and laundering. The first time she laundered, she had asked the cook where the wood ash was. Wood ash? Wood ash? Said the cook, incredulous. Clean the sheets, explained Catherine. The cook told her to go back to her goat shit. It was the first time Catherine heard the word peasant used as an insult.
It's like I started breathing on a night we kissed, and I can't remember what I ever did before. What would we do, baby, without us? What would we do, baby, without us? And there ain't no nothing we can't love each other through. What would we do, baby?
You're listening to Art Bank.
And you're back with us. That was John Berger and then the Family Ties theme song, which is very topical because we've got Li Ming in the studio.
Yeah, that's quite fitting.
I think it's fitting for every Sunday morning.
Yeah, I'd say so. But in particular, I guess, I know it's kind of fitting in an obscure way. I mean, there's a sentiment. There's also the fact that there was a whole episode based on your idea of a telethon.
Yeah, which is, it's a very good episode. Well, because part of the premise of Family Ties is that the father, which was a sitcom from the 1980s, one of the premises of it was that the father worked at a public broadcasting station, which ties into the project you're currently working on. Do you want to elaborate on that?
Sure. So, basically, Daphne Simons and I have started something called the Trust Us Contemporary Art Trust as part of a residency coming up at Enjoy next month. And as part of that, we are aiming to pull together a national contemporary art collection. And we are asking people to donate artworks for that. And our main, I guess, event in order to raise donations is a telethon.
And do you want to sort of unpack that a bit more? Because the telethon, I think, is, I feel like telethons have kind of faded from consciousness
sure
a little bit.
Because I guess the whole point of a telethon back in the 80s was when television wasn't 24 hours. And you couldn't watch television pretty much whenever you wanted. So it was the novelty of having television, you know, when there wasn't a television. The Goodnight Kiwi. Do you remember the Goodnight Kiwi?
I'm aware of the Goodnight Kiwi. It's a little bit before. I mean, my family didn't have a TV, so it's also not really a thing I could engage with.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, yeah, that appeal of the fact that the telethon is, it's the full deal. It's TV around the clock, and they're trying frantically to raise money and awareness, kind of.
Yeah. And so we thought, instead of trying to raise money, we're trying to raise art donations. And that a telethon would be a really fun way, an interesting way of doing that. Because I guess for both of these things, like in terms of the art collection, we're really trying to open it up to whoever wishes to donate a piece of art. So it's an open policy. The only restriction is on size. But other than that, you know, we're trying to run with the fact that this is open. So if you say it's art, then
so if it's like,
we'll accept it.
If it's like 100 megabytes is fine, but if it's 16 gig, it's too large?
No, that's fine. It's paddling pool. 16
okay,
like, gig fits in a paddling pool, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. Okay, paddling pool.
Yeah, paddling pool.
So, like, it's like,
but again,
how many terabyte hard drives does it take to fill a paddling pool?
Heaps.
Okay, cool. So
heaps.
That's the challenge.
But, terabyte hard drives are expensive.
They are.
Yeah.
You could probably put your money into something better. Like, if you're going to buy a paddling pool's worth of terabyte hard drives. So, this is we've talked to you before on Art Bank regarding your show at Canopy, which was
last year. Yeah.
Very early last year.
Yeah.
Since then, you've had the Riff Raff show at Glovebox, which I alluded to earlier in the show.
Oh, yeah.
And you were also in the Seegers prize, as well as a few other
Shows. Other things. Yeah, it's been busy.
So yeah, how does this telethon kind of fit into your general
practice?
Yeah,
I guess. I guess I'm interested in the whole way boundaries are defined within art. Like, you know, the old internal question: what is art? Where it begins and ends, and the way that different art communities are kind of, you know, the lines between various art communities are drawn. And I know Daphne's kind of interested in that too. And I guess with the Riff Raff show, we saw that as part installation, part performance,
part public program. So interested in the idea of public participation and what that can mean, but also the idea of, I guess, the whole show, or in this case, the residency, the kind of that as a durational performance of one kind. And I guess having a telethon and will hopefully give people interested in ideas of performance the chance to participate in this format. Yeah, and there's something kind of, I guess, retro-naff about the idea of having a telethon.
Well, I think there's something really nice about how I feel like there was a period where a lot of contemporary sitcoms, I'm thinking in particular 30 Rock, but other shows, riffed on the telethon, which is really funny because maybe their primary audience wouldn't have the familiarity with it that the writers of those shows might have.
Yeah.
But even that was like 6 or 7 years ago. And there is kind of a definite through line between the telethon and the whole crowdfunding movement and all these kind of, these things where people who actually get to inherit the media created by a company pay for it incrementally.
Yeah. And I guess, well, one of the aims of this is the idea of the assembled collection kind of being a kind of artwork in itself, with the aim of donating the complete collection to the Chartwell Trust or offering it to them. They've got no obligation to accept it, of course, but I think there's something in that gesture.
And it definitely does kind of connect into that blending of boundaries in regards to different, I guess, subcultures. And, you know, there's obviously the whole sort of NAF differences formed between this idea of high art and low art and that whole... It's definitely a debate that's been articulated.
Yeah.
But there's a nice kind of response to that in allowing entrance just by participation.
Yeah. And I'm really looking forward to seeing what we get, but also seeing, you know, how that is installed in the gallery. Because the show will be on for a couple of weeks after the telethon, in which we won't be resident, so it'll be interesting just to see how that exists in that space. And there's also, like we talked about, the opportunities for satellite exhibitions around the different centres as well. So.
And there's something funny about... So Enjoy's final show at the end of the year...
By Enjoy.
...was the By Enjoy. So you're actually kind of... Yeah, it makes quite a funny little time because there's 4 months where Enjoy does two sort of massive group shows with this hugely diverse range of work based purely on... You know, it's not curated in as much a sense.
Although By Enjoy, people were invited.
Oh, they're invited, but specific works aren't requested, to my understanding.
That's true. So, yeah, that's true. It's curated in terms of the artists, but not in terms of the work. Yeah.
Should we go to a song?
Yeah.
Do you have any requests?
I'm sorry, I'm a blank canvas. Well, we were looking for the old telethon theme from New Zealand, but I don't think we can find it.
Well, I'm going to pull up.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I've got one.
Oh, you've got one?
It's a bit old, but Don't Let the Sun Go Down on Me. George Michael, Elton John.
That was played on the about half an hour ago.
Oh my god, that's so funny.
That was Angus just played that song.
Oh, me and Angus are on the wavelengths.
There is no George Michael on the BFM.
That's okay. Oh, I wonder
BFM
why.
BFM system. Oh. It's so strange.
There's boundaries again, you know. What's
yeah, exactly.
With that?
What's going on?
Pop, alt, what?
Mm. I am really confused. I'm amazed by what's on the BFM system. Mm. Like, there's the complete works of, what's that? Slade. The complete works of Slade. Like, if you want a Slade song, it's on there.
Okay.
But then, like, there are sort of weird gaps. You're like, I thought there'd be more than, like... I feel like there's, like, 12 Nirvana songs and 3 of them are Come As You
okay,
Are.
Okay, I've got one.
Okay.
Putting It Together, Barbra Streisand. It's quite fitting. About art. I used it in one of my works, but there's really something in it for everyone. Yeah, that's the one.
Look, I've spent a lot of time working on this.
Look, no one's gonna buy it. No one.
Well, how can
nobody in Middle America anyway, that's for sure.
He's right.
Well, why?
Sweetheart, it's just not commercial.
What is commercial?
It's not what's selling nowadays.
I mean, personally, I
love
it.
Be nice, girl.
Nobody's into this kind of material.
You have to pay a price, girl.
This album needs a hit single we can push.
They like to give advice, girl.
The whole idea's too risky.
Don't think about it twice, girl.
Your audience won't understand this kind of thing.
It's time to get to work. I disagree. Why don't you wait till you hear it?
This is like your old stuff.
Art isn't easy.
We gotta appeal to the kids.
Even when you're hot.
Why would you want to make an album like this anyway?
Advancing art is easy.
I think we gotta talk seriously about
financing
this.
Financing it is not.
Why take chances?
A vision's just a vision if it's only in your head.
Nobody respects your artistic integrity more than I do.
If no one gets to hear it, it's as good as dead.
You have to think about your career.
It has to come to life. Only way to make a work of art. Every moment makes a contribution. Every little detail plays a part. Having just the vision's no solution. Everything depends on execution. Putting it together, that's what counts. Ounce by ounce, putting it together. Small amounts, adding up to make a work of art. First of all, you need a good foundation. Otherwise, it's risky from the start. Takes a little cocktail conversation, but without the proper preparation. Having just the vision's no solution. Everything depends on execution. The art of making art is putting it together, bit by bit.
We really need all these musicians.
Link by link, making the connections, yes we do. Drink by drink, taking every comment as it comes. Learning how to play the politician like you play piano, bass and drums. Otherwise you'll find your composition isn't gonna get much exhibition. Art isn't easy. Every minor detail is a major decision. Have to keep things in scale, have to hold to your vision. Cocktail conversation, if it gets the funds for your foundation. Every time I start to feel defensive, I remember vinyl is expensive.
Would you agree to do an interview?
Maybe one. Building up the image, shot by shot, keeping at a distance doesn't pay. Still, if you remember your objective, not give all your privacy away. A little bit of hype can be effective, as long as you can keep it in perspective. Even when you get some recognition, everything you do, you still audition. Art isn't easy. All they ever want is repetition. All they really like is what they know. Gotta keep a link with your tradition. Gotta learn to trust your intuition while you reestablish your position, so that you can be on exhibition. So that your work can be on exhibition. Be new girl, they tell you till they're blue girl. You're new or else you're through. Putting it together, piece by piece, working out the vision night and day. All it takes is time and perseverance, with a little luck along the way. Putting in a personal appearance, gathering supporters and adherents.
Oh, she's an original.
Was.
Mapping out the songs, but in addition, harmonizing each negotiation, balancing the part that's all musician with the part that's strictly presentation, balancing the money with the mission, till you have the perfect orchestration. Even if you do have the suspicion that it's taking all your concentration, the art of making art. Bit by bit, beat by beat, part by part, sheet by sheet, chart by chart, track by track, by reel by reel, by pat by sack, by snip by shot, by shot, by step by shot, by shot, by down. And that is the state of the art.
You're listening to Art Bank.
That was Barbara Streisand putting it together.
It's quite something, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, just seeing how every time she sort of hit that high note, the levels just
can't handle right the abs.
Mm.
Yeah. I find it quite an interesting commentary on the practice of art. I think it was actually written by Stephen Sondheim for a musical called Sundays in the Park with George, which is about the pointillist painter Georges Seurat working on his masterpiece.
It's just like that combined with the sort of talkiness of it. It's like, oh really, Stephen Sondheim wrote that?
Yeah, and it's quite funny because one of the guys talking is David Geffen.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he's doing one of the bit parts. Babs just got some of her friends in to do the
bit. That's cool.
And she customised it to change it from being an artist to singer.
Yep.
Yeah, hence vinyl is expensive, yeah. Hope it was all right. Sorry.
It's
a bit much.
Yeah,
for,
I think
for this time of the morning.
It's always good to add a little. I mean, like, you know, we've played a lot of sort of noise, sort of drone music on here. So this is like, it's nice. Yeah,
some good old fashioned melodies. So yeah, back to the Trust Us Contemporary Art Trust telethon.
Yeah.
Basically, we'd love your donations. It's basically, it's going to be what people choose to make of it, what people choose to donate. So if anyone's interested, they can get in touch with us at trustuscontemporaryarttrust@gmail.com. So if you just drop us a line with some ideas on what you'd like to show, and then we can, start talking about it. We'll obviously, for those of you all of you actually throughout, we can help in terms of transport, hence the or freight. So yeah, it's just, and also if you're interested in participating in the telethon, so we're definitely going to have a centre in Auckland and a centre in Wellington. So if, well, I guess this one goes through Auckland, but those of you who are in Auckland who are interested in participating, you can get in touch with us via the email or via Theo, who will kindly be hosting the Auckland chapter for us. Do you want to talk a bit about?
We're still in discussion and preparation. I feel like this is like an unveiling, like, oh, involved all along. But I feel like we're still sort of working out specifics about collecting works, but it will be somewhere in central Auckland.
Yes.
And this telethon, I mean, we haven't really gone into detail about how people will actually be able to view it.
Yes. Oh, it'll be live streamed, probably through YouTube. We're looking at various platforms, but I think it'll be YouTube. So we will let you know closer to the time. And we'll also be running Enjoy's social media feed from early February, so that'll be a good place to get information on what's happening. But yeah, I mean, we're kind of looking at a good old-fashioned variety show, ideally. So any kind of performance thing, it could even be a talk, it could be a little seminar.
I think fire jugglings.
Yeah, well.
That's kind of what's requested, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And, even those of you who are interested in doing some kind of art performance, that's welcome as well. If it's 4 hours long, we could talk about it. But there is, like you said the other day, there's the option if you've got a really long durational work that we could just pre-record it and speed it up.
Just, maximise that thing.
Yeah.
I mean, that's always what I think they should do with, some of those sort of Marina Abramović performances.
You get the essence of it, don't you?
Yeah, just fast-forward it.
Yeah, you need the idea.
Yeah, and then it'll be really funny because, it'll be everything be slightly high-pitched.
Yeah, so okay. So just open to discussion. It's the same with installation. I was thinking about it this morning. If someone wants to donate an installation, I'd like to be able to accommodate that somehow. So again, just get in touch and we can keep talking.
Well, we're going to go to a song now.
Nice.
First, we're going to do a spot block, and then we're going to go to Fashion by David Bowie, because again, it would be his 70th birthday today if he was still alive. Here we go.
At this radio station, we do our utmost to abide by the Broadcasting Standards Authority and their rules and guidelines. If you seriously think we've crossed the line on air, give us a call on 309 4831 within 20 working days of the broadcast date and tell us about it. We'll be able to help you out and tell you the procedure if you wish to make a formal complaint to the Broadcasting Standards Authority. Fuck knuckles, cock and piss. Balls. Thank you. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Art Bank.
And, yeah, you're back with Art Bank, back with Theo. Li Ming has just left, but again, her and Daphne Simons are doing a ongoing... We'll be doing a residency at Enjoy Gallery in Wellington for the summer, which involves them collecting... forming a collection of artwork donated. So you can go onto Enjoy's website to find out more about that, and Enjoy's social media will also be promoting it if you're interested in donating or just viewing the talent they'll be doing to promote the event. Now, up next to close out the show, there's not really much happening in Auckland at the moment in terms of art, so we're not doing a gig guide for a little while, but we do have another John Berger reading. Here we go.
I want to read you a short text I wrote about 10 years ago about James Joyce and his book Ulysses. I haven't, in fact, reread this text since the last time I read it to check the last details before sending it to the printers. So it's a text which is a bit strange even to me. But I'll see if I can read it. I first sailed into James Joyce's Ulysses when I was 14 years old. I use the words sailed into instead of read because, as its title reminds us, the book is like an ocean. You don't read it, you navigate it. Like many people whose childhoods are lonely, I had, by the age of 14, an imagination that was already grown up, ready to put to sea. What it lacked, totally, was experience. I had already read Joyce's portrait of the artist as a young man, and its title was the honorary title I gave to myself in my daydreams. Artist as a young man. A kind of alibi, a kind of seaman's card to show when challenged to the middle-aged or one of their agents. It was the winter of 1940-41. Joyce was in fact dying of a duodenal ulcer in Zurich. But I did not know that then. I didn't think of him as mortal. I knew what he looked like, and even that he suffered from bad eyesight. It wasn't that I pictured him as a god, but I felt him through his words. Through his endless perambulations, I felt him as ever-present, and so not prone to die. The book had been given me by a friend, who found it in Paris. It was published in Paris by the Shakespeare Company. And when he gave me the book, I believed it was illegal in Britain to own a copy. In fact, this had been the case. It wasn't any longer so. Yet, the supposed illegality of the book was for me, the 14-year-old, a very telling literary quality. And there, perhaps I was not mistaken. I was convinced that legality was an arbitrary pretense, necessary for the social contract, indispensable for society's survival, but turning its back on most lived experience. And I knew this by instinct. And when I read the book for the first time, I came to appreciate with mounting excitement that its supposed illegality as an object, as to say a book, was more than matched by the illegitimacy of the lives and souls in its epic. Whilst I read the book, the Battle of Britain was being fought in the sky, above the southeast of England and London. The country was expecting invasion. No future was certain. Between my legs, I was beginning to become a man. But it was quite possible that I would not live long enough to discover what life was about. And of course, I didn't know. And of course, I didn't believe what I was told, either in history classes, on the radio, or in the, what I called, the basement of my life. the accounts that I heard, all the things that people were saying, were too small to add up to the immensity of what I did not know and of what I might never have in my life. But Ulysses was different. This book had that immensity. It didn't pretend to it. It was impregnated by it. It flowed through it. To compare the book with an ocean again makes sense. For isn't it the most liquid book ever written? Now, I was about to write. There were many parts during this first reading which I didn't understand. Yet this would have been false. There were no parts that I understood. And there was no part that did not make the same promise to me. The promise that deep down, beneath the words, beneath the pretenses, beneath the claims and the everlasting moralistic judgments, beneath the opinions and lessons and boasts and cant of everyday life, the lives of adult men and women were made up of such stuff as this book was made of. Awful, with flecks of the divine in it. The first and last recipe. Even at my young age then, I recognized Joyce's prodigious erudition. He was, in one sense, learning incarnate. But learning without solemnity. Learning that threw its cap and gown away to become joker and juggler. As I write about him, something of the rhythm of his words still animates my pen. Perhaps even more significant for me at that time was the company his learning kept. The company of the unimportant. Those who are forever off stage. The company of publicans and sinners, as the Bible puts it. Low company. Ulysses is full of the disdain of the represented for those who claim falsely to represent them, and packed with the tender irony of those who are said, falsely said, to be lost.
At this radio station, we do our utmost to abide by the Broadcasting Standards Authority and their rules and guidelines. If you seriously think we've crossed the line on air, give us a call on 309 4831 within 20 working days of the broadcast date and tell us about it. We'll be able to help you out and tell you the procedure if you wish to make a formal complaint to the Broadcasting Standards Authority. Fuck knuckles, cock and piss. Balls. Thank you.
You're listening to Artbank.
Just before the break, that was our final reading today by John Berger. You can find a lot of content from him online, and also his wonderful short story and critical collections and his novels. He is going to be a sorely missed voice on issues of politics, Marxism, art, and really a whole slew of things. So, you know, now's a nice time to think about what he's contributed to the world from, yeah, his novels to his art writing to, in the end, his storytelling. I'm going to close off now with What in the World by, again, David Bowie.
You're just a little girl with grey eyes. Never mind, say something. Wait until the crowd cries. You're just a little girl with grey eyes. Deep in your room, you never leave your room. Something deep inside of me, yearning deep inside of me, talking through the gloom. What in the world can you do? What in the world can you do? I'm in the mood for your love.